From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Restaurants and bars reopening in northern Michigan knew they were in for a wild ride this past weekend.
Oh, I knew people would want to come out. My phone started buzzing Sunday night, and we were taking calls from all over the Midwest while the governor was still talking on Monday.
Today on the show, we speak with the owner of one popular Traverse City spot about how she did it. We'll also hear from a tavern in Leland that chose to skip the lucrative holiday weekend.
With 4 days to prepare for what is annually quite a large onslaught of tourists, it was not enough for us.
And a high school senior from Detroit talks about rethinking his plans to go to college out of state.
Is this the best place where you want to go? Is this place going to be safe by the time you move down to school? A lot of decisions that we really didn't think we were going to have to think about as intently.
Those stories and more just ahead. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. This past weekend was a real test for businesses in northern Michigan. After spending nearly 2 months shut down, restaurants and bars in the UP and the northern part of the Mitten got the go-ahead for sit-down dining at limited capacity for the weekend.
Opening us up for the holiday weekend into the influx of guests from elsewhere, areas that have much greater instances of COVID-19 infections, was surprising. I can't imagine how anyone believed that anyone would stay home.
Some welcomed the flood of tourists. We'll hear from one restaurateur a little later this hour. Others were erring on the side of caution, sticking to takeout-only service for a little while longer. And Skip Telgard is one of them. He owns the Bluebird Tavern and Restaurant in Leland, and he joins us now. Skip, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, April. It's nice to be here with you.
Nice to have you. So Governor Whitmer loosened the COVID-19 restrictions on May 18th, allowing restaurants to reopen for dine-in this weekend, just in time for Memorial Day. As the owner of a northern Michigan establishment, who I'm guessing does a fair amount of business from folks coming in to visit, what did you think when you heard that?
Well, it was a good news, bad news kind of thing for us. We were all hoping to have the opportunity to open as soon as possible, but with 4 days to really prepare for what is annually quite a large onslaught of tourists, it was not enough for us. So we did not feel comfortable. My wife and I talked about it. It took us about 5 minutes to make that decision. I very much support what the governor's been doing, and we were glad to hear that some signs were starting to look better and that some people could open, but it didn't fit our model, so we opted not to.
Right. I'm just curious, what would prep look like before Memorial Day weekend in any other year?
Well, you kind of slowly work your way up to it. You know, business ramps up. We're super seasonal in Leland, and our businesses are right downtown. So the village itself is still pretty quiet prior to Memorial Weekend, but it gives us a chance to slowly ramp ourselves up, get our staff trained, really pull it all together so we're really at our best Memorial Weekend. It's something we shoot for every year. This year, we kind of held back and we had some things to do to prepare, a lot of things to do to prepare, of course, but we did not feel like that places were going to be allowed to be open. So I'm not going to say we were unprepared. We really felt like it wasn't going to happen. Then when we heard from the governor that she was going to open, we started thinking really long and hard about things like bathrooms. This is something a lot of people don't think about, but we're in the center of a village. It fills up. I mean, Memorial Weekend, really, we go from 0 to 60 in overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute we open our doors, we become kind of the village's bathroom in many ways.
Right.
And we do have a public bathroom, a municipal bathroom in town, which the township operates. And they do a great job with it. And it's right at the edge of what we call Fishtown, a very busy section of our town. But anyway, there's a public bathroom. They weren't able to open that. In fact, they're probably not going to open that till next weekend is what I'm guessing. So we saw, okay, that wasn't going to be open. How can we let really let a lot of people come in and out of our doors and keep our staff safe.
What were you considering when about staff safety when you made your decision?
Well, it's everything to us. I can't imagine being in a, some of the pictures I see on TV are just kind of scare the daylights out of me with people gathering in huge groups. And sure, we would have socially distanced and we were prepared for all of that and the hygiene aspects of it. And we had the local health departments and the Chamber of Commerce's and there's a wealth of great information out there and we've been poring over that stuff for a long time. So we were mentally prepared in that way, but we looked at a few things that just didn't feel right to us.
Such as?
So we held up. Well, like I said, like the bathrooms.
Just knowing that people who weren't customers would be coming in for a short amount of time and then cruising on out.
Sure. In large numbers, in very large numbers. And having enough staff to clean those bathrooms on a very, very regular basis. I mean, I felt like every time a person would use a bathroom, I almost have to go in there and disinfect it. Maybe that's overkill, but I don't think we're too far from that. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to think in those terms. And something as simple as, washing dishes, having enough staff to do the dishes properly. When you've got dishes coming off the floor of your tavern, I have 300 seats, a tavern and restaurant. How are you going to make sure that nobody touches those dishes?
Mm-hmm.
You've got to disinfect them and get them into the dishwasher properly and make that all work.
Skip, it's
a lot more to think about than a lot of people realize.
Skip, how much of a hit is it for you not to be open on Memorial Day weekend?
Financially, it's a very large hit. It's a big opening weekend for us. We take in a lot of money, probably take in as much just in a weekend as we do in 2 weeks in the wintertime, or actually more. So it is just what we need in a normal year coming off of a very long winter. We actually closed for a few months in the winter, and this year we were just getting ready to start ramping up, and then this happened. So yeah, it is very important to us, but nothing's more important to us than the safety of our staff and our customers who we would also be inviting to come in to see us.
Was it very busy in Leland over the weekend?
It wasn't nearly as busy as a normal Memorial weekend. There were a lot of people around, and I think some of the other, there were a couple other restaurants that did open. And by the way, I applaud them for doing it. They're very professional people. All of them are. And we're really lucky. We've got a great group of restaurateurs in our village, and we all care about one another. And we're all professionals. And I didn't worry for a minute about any of them because everybody was taking the measures they needed to get it done.
What are your next steps toward reopening for the summer? Do you have a date in mind at this point?
I don't have an absolute date, but we did curb service the whole time. So that was good for us. It kept our kitchen busy. We had enough staff that were well quarantined that could come in and work. Mostly my family, my wife and I, and my two kids came in and were just a huge help for us. And we had several other people who were well quarantined for weeks, actually months in some cases. So we felt extremely good. We still follow all the measures that we need to do when they come in. So anyway, curb service was a good, a little bit of a trial run for us in a lot of ways and generated some revenue that was needed and some tips for our staff too, which was really important. And the way it looks right now, we're working on outdoor service being our next step. Everything that we hear and read is that outdoor service tends to be a lot safer situation. If you group a lot of people into a confined area and you're all breathing the same air conditioned air or whatever your air is like in your particular place, I think there's a higher chance of infection. So we really feel strongly about going outside. We have a patio outdoors that we've had for years, and the Liquor Control Commission has really stepped up and is kind of making it a lot easier for us to expand our outdoor areas. So we were really happy about that. So we're working on that plan right now. We're probably going to put a tent area in out there, a fairly large tent area, to add on to our present patio area. So we should be able to seat a good number of people out there with social distancing, of course. Everybody's going to be, tables are going to be 9 feet apart or more, actually. So really, that's the next step, is to start doing outdoor service as soon as we can. And of course, that's all weather dependent. But if I do a nice tent out there, I think it's going to be a beautiful spot. Where our patio is right along the river here in Leland, so it's really going to be a lovely spot.
Well, Skip, please do save us a table, and we're hopeful that your business will be able to thrive safely this summer.
Well, thank you, April, and I really appreciate talking to you. And yeah, hopefully we can get open indoors as things move forward. You know, that's our goal. When the big season of July and August get here, we want to be open indoors, but we're not going to do it until we're absolutely certain and we can feel really safe about both our staff and our customers. So that's where we're headed right now, and always with an optimistic view, though, April.
Skip Telgard is the owner of Bluebird Restaurant and Tavern in Leland. We're curious about your experiences with dining out, whether you own or work at an establishment, or you've just been thinking about going out yourself. We'd love to talk to you or just hear about how your summer plans more generally have been affected by COVID-19. If you can share with us, our email address is stateside@michiganradio.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Michigan Radio, or just hit us up on Twitter at Stateside Radio. Spring's confinement is just not natural for so many high school seniors. No packed auditorium, no grad party with all your friends and family, but some are finding ways to say goodbye amid the uncertainty.
You have to be more practical, but there's also things where it's like, at the end of the day, nothing's changed. Like, those are still going to be all my guys.
We'll meet one graduating senior after the break. Stay with us. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. It is high school graduation season, and so far from what many young people and their families expected. Young people like Lamar Price II, or Deuce, as he's known to his family and friends. He's coming to the end of his time at the University of Detroit Jesuit High School. His pre-COVID plan was to go to Xavier University and play baseball there. So what now? Deuce, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about what your life's been like the past couple of months?
Yeah, just a little bit is mostly schoolwork, scholarships, and attempting to stay in shape. For the most part, it's been fun hanging out with family.
Which of those three would you say is the most difficult?
Staying in shape.
Interesting.
Yeah, staying in a playing shape where I know I can go on a field and play. I mean, obviously there's adjustments because there's nothing like playing in a game versus practicing.
I'm guessing you can't get to your regular gym. What do those workouts look like?
So there are a lot of fields that are open. So it's kind of like doing sprints, doing distance running, and then doing footwork and stuff. So yeah, it's attempts to try everything.
As you mentioned, though, you've had some academic things going on too. What was graduation from Jesuit like?
So we haven't graduated yet. Tentatively, we'll have a graduation on July 30th.
July 30th?
Yeah, because we had a meeting with all the seniors, us in the administration, and we were pretty adamant about having, on both ends, they were pretty adamant about having a physical graduation. So we're trying to pull all the stops before people go to college and stuff to make sure we have some form of a real graduation, whether it's no parents and stuff and they have a Zoom call, or we have an actual ceremony.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about what your family life has been like and how you and your folks have been spending the time together?
Yeah. So I stay with my mom and my grandma. my mom's an event coordinator and my grandma works at Comcast. So for the majority of it, my grandma's been having to work at least 2 to 3 days a week just because Comcast has been up and moving the entire time, basically.
Wow.
For my mom, it's difficult being an event coordinator during this time because obviously you can't plan events and stuff. So we already spent, me and her spend a lot of time together throughout my life anyway, just because in a single parent household is kind of like, you kind of are a lot closer than most people are. So my mom and I have always been close. So there's nothing, we've gotten closer, but like mostly about like me getting ready to leave for school and stuff. But we are getting cabin fever, so she lets me leave the house as long as I like physical distance and stuff. It's a lot of attempts to like stay close and do a couple family activities in the house or like cook or something together. But then it's like, okay, I don't need to see you guys for like the next 6 hours.
Yeah, it's a lot. Well, as we mentioned, you had decided to attend Xavier University in Louisiana on scholarships for your academics and for baseball. Before we talk about the schoolwork, can we talk a little bit about baseball? When did you start playing?
I started playing baseball when I was 4 or 5. It was T-ball age.
Why was it your sport of choice?
So when I was younger, my mom worked for the Tigers from 2006 to 2014. So one of the first sports I kind of recognized and saw frequently was baseball. And as I got older, the difficulty in it became like the hardest but the most fun part of trying to figure it out. Like by no means would I say I'm like a great player or anything, but like in some of my groups where like some of my friends are like going to like these big D1 schools, I can say I can hold my own a little bit. And being able to like in such a difficult mental and physical game that carries a lot of weight for me. Yeah, I say mostly the difficulty. I overthink everything, but it's also like gives me a chance to like have a cerebral look at like a physical sport and that kind of thing.
You know, you never hear football players say that. Who is your Tiger? Who is your favorite?
I would say probably Curtis Granderson, just because I've gotten a chance to have a relationship with him over the past decade, honestly. But
nice.
I'm sure. Oh, Ramon Santiago was when I was younger. He's back with the Tiger, so that was very exciting for me. But probably those two for sure. Well, some of the older guys.
You're a catcher. Will you tell us a little bit about why you took to that position?
I was mostly the only one willing to do it when I was younger. yeah. Nowadays, it's like I'm playing more utility, so that's more like playing everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I took to catching just because no one else wanted to do it, and it was one of the harder things to do. Whether it was the blocking, whether it was just getting hit by foul tips, like it's hard to convince kids like 9, 10, 11 to like sit back there. And like some guys want to be in the action, some guys want to have their faces showing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just kind of allowed me a way to be in control of everything, but also like give me like some of the biggest chances to like learn and adapt to stuff during the game.
Yeah. It's like you say, that's the chance to get the cerebral look at the game.
Right.
Yeah. Have you been in contact with the coaching staff at Xavier about whether they'll be holding practices this summer or what the story is?
So not really, just with everything happening. And especially because we're a first-year program since like 1960. Ideally, at this point, one, we're trying to get players, like make sure we have players attending, which was a big thing with me and my coach was picking a school for me was financially, like that was the biggest driving point was finances. Mm-hmm. So I had constant communication with him about, can I afford school right now? Probably not, but I'll make sure I keep letting you know. So at no point did we ever really talk about practice. And I don't think we even have like a schedule on the website yet.
Why was it appealing to you to go to a first year program?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't have a huge desire to play baseball in college. For the past like 4 or 5 years, like I was set. It was like, oh yeah, I want to play at like a Division I school and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like I like staying too busy with a lot of other things. And a lot that comes with playing college anything is a level of time commitment. So for me, at one point, it was Xavier's the one school on my list of schools that doesn't have baseball. And if I get in and if I can afford it more than other schools, then I'm perfectly fine with not playing. Mm-hmm. That was the conclusion I had come to, I think, middle of high school, something like that, where it was just like, if the schools that I want to go to don't offer me for baseball or don't have a team, then I'm perfectly fine not playing. And then it just so happened that when I was interested in applying to schools and stuff, we got in contact with the AD and he said, we're having a baseball team this year. Mm-hmm. So Xavier was my number one at that point. And it was like the fact that they had baseball makes it better. And then they also offered me an athletic scholarship based on need. At that point, it felt, I didn't feel like obligated to take it, but it made affording Xavier a lot easier.
Xavier, for those who don't know it, this is not the one in Cincinnati. This is the one in New Orleans. And I believe it's a historically black college, isn't it?
Yeah, I say it's the only historically black Catholic university.
Right. So Xavier is in New Orleans. That's another part of the country that was hit very hard by COVID-19. How are you thinking about going away to school and going away to school there right now? I mean, were there any second thoughts about it?
Not for me. My mom obviously has had to do a lot of looking with me about schools, environments around the school, kind of a lot of stuff where it's like, is this the best place where you want to go? Is this place going to be safe by the time you move down to school? A lot of decisions that we really didn't think we were going to have to think about as intently during the decision process. But like part of Xavier, I believe, is being used for like something medically related. Like I want to say they're having some patients there in some capacity, I believe. But I mean, that's what they're known for. I mean, they're known for their sciences, their research departments.
Was that part of the reason you wanted to go there?
Yeah, I want to do disease research. So a big thing was the fact that for people who look like me, they're so good at what they do. And obviously, some people like look at the numbers and say, oh, they're number one in black doctors enrolling in medical school, but most of the school's girls anyway. Well, it's like, well, that means there's a good influence of people, a great faculty around them that is supporting them in a way that they're able to succeed in undergrad and attend med school. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, that you can't really get upset at a school that's good at what it does.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking today with Lamar Price II. Folks call him Deuce. He's graduating this spring from U of D Jesuit High School and plans to attend Xavier University in New Orleans. I have to ask if your ideas about going to school to do medical research changed at all because of the epidemic.
It did not. I have been wanting to do medical research, I would say, since freshman year of high school. It was something about there were so many different reasons, but like just the complexities of it. I think we learned about, in my freshman year, we had an extra credit project about CRISPR, which is like a gene editing enzyme that I just like had a really good time like listening to the TED Talk, kind of doing a little bit of research on it, and just doing like a report on it for, it was like an extra credit project, but just like the capacities for something like that was really interesting to me. And then my junior year, I did cancer research at Carmanos in downtown Detroit. So it was like all these different experiences that I had where it was just like, oh, this is really fun. I don't have a need to express myself, but like I feel like the ability for medical research to have me, at least with the feeling that I can make a difference, is higher and more intriguing to me than like other fields. My mom's an event coordinator. I'm not big into dealing with other people in that capacity as far as like planning stuff,
right,
for like events and everything. My grandma does Comcast stuff, and it's like I'm not really big into like software and engineering kind of stuff. So I've had a lot of influence in my family in like different fields, and I always kind of thought it was just like I don't like what they do in the same way that they do. I really like this. So it really didn't change anything. It almost made it easier to say, yeah, I'm picking in the right thing. Because one of the things is in a pandemic, if everything goes wrong, what jobs will still be available?
No question.
Yeah. I don't know. That's been my thought process.
You know, I can tell from the way you're talking about this that you and your family really put a lot of thought into your school situation, you know, what this was going to mean, what this was going to look like. And you've been spending this time with your mom and your grandma at home as everyone's been in quarantine. Do you worry about your mom and your grandma with you not being there when you go down south for school?
Yes and no. I'm more worried now than I am later. Just because we are so close. I have a relationship with my dad, but he stays in Columbus, Ohio. So it's just one of those where the relationship I've developed with my mom, like, that's my best friend in a sense. So like leaving her, leaving my grandma, who I've stayed with since my mom graduated from college, for like a little bit of context, like my mom had me, I think her junior year. And then after she graduated, she moved back home to Detroit from Nashville, and we've just stayed with my grandma. So it was this idea that, like, we've always been close since the earliest I can remember. So the idea of going super far, although they encouraged me to do it, it is one of those where I was like, I almost feel bad, and, like, I want to stay closer. But it was like, for my whole life, they've always been saying, go away for school, experience something. And I'm not going to, like, I don't feel like it's disrespectful if I went to school close. But, like, I also feel like if they wanted me to, then they know something that I didn't or that I don't right now.
Yeah. You know, there are so many people sort of around your age who are treating this time as, you know, the last chance they're going to have hanging out with their friends in the lives that they've been living for 18 years. Maybe the last chance to be with the places and the people that they've spent so much of their high school years. And yet, it sounds like, you know, you're sort of a practical person by nature, but it's definitely true that the pandemic has forced people into, like, next level practicality. Do you feel like you're going to remember this time as something that, you know, where you missed out on stuff, or maybe a time where you learned and picked up a few things that you'll carry with you going forward?
A little bit of everything. So there's like elements where it's like you have to be more practical, but there's also things where it's like at the end of the day, nothing's changed. Like, those are still going to be all my guys. I'm still going to go back and visit, whether it's this year on break or when I'm graduated and applying to med school or something. Like, some of the stuff is changing right now, but at the end of the day, they're like, it's just gonna be like, oh, remember when that happened a couple years ago.
You know, given that you went to this prep school that was super challenging but also predominantly white, was that a factor in choosing a historically black university to attend?
Partially. So I grew up in the city of Detroit. I went to a lot of neighborhood schools growing up. I kind of bounced around from the west side of Detroit, and then I went over to the east side and graduated from elementary school, and then kind of moved around from there until seventh grade. And it was one of those where it was like, yes, I felt comfortable. Yes, everybody looked like me. But people would also come up to my mom all the time and say that you should move your son somewhere. Because my teachers would always tell my mom, it's like, he's not being challenged enough. Which I never really thought about. I just thought it's like, oh, I got the work done pretty fast. But my mom was like looking for options as far as like, how can I challenge my son to like do better, succeed, go to the places that they say are these like great schools and whatnot. I'm not saying that there weren't any like predominantly black schools that could have offered that for me, but the school that I found was a predominantly white school. In regards to that helping me choose a college, for the most part, I think I probably would have chosen the college that I would have chosen anyway. So my enjoyment of medicine stuff came from my biology teacher at the predominantly white school. But my mom went to an HBCU. My dad did, like, it was always going to be like family ties to it anyway. So I don't feel like that my high school really changed it. But I do feel like my high school changed which direction I was looking at.
Is it possible with everything else that's going on in the world right now to still feel a sense of excitement about starting school in the fall?
Absolutely. That is one of the main things I still talk about, especially in a place as culturally dense and, to me, as exciting as New Orleans is. I've only been one time, and I think it was for like 3 or 4 days, but like that was one of my like favorite visits that I've ever had. Because I used to travel a lot for like chess and baseball and all that kind of stuff. It was something about like the experience I got in New Orleans, the food, the music, the people, that was just like, the next 4 years are about to be some of the craziest years of my life, for better or for worse. And I'm genuinely excited for it.
Well, Deuce, good luck this fall, and we're pulling for you, and we're looking forward to hearing more about what your experience is like if we can touch base again.
Of course, I appreciate it.
Lamar Price II, or Deuce. He's getting ready to graduate from University of Detroit Jesuit High School. And as we heard, he's headed for Xavier in Louisiana in the fall. After the break, we check in with Trattoria Stella in Traverse City. They reopened this weekend.
So I had no doubt that people would want to come out. I think our local community obviously wanted to come out, especially because we've remained relatively healthy up here.
Stick around. We'll hear how it went next on Stateside. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. A little earlier this hour, we heard from a tavern owner up north who said he was not ready to rush a reopening this weekend, even though Memorial Day weekend is a very important time for the hospitality industry. There were other restaurants and bars, like Trattoria Stella in Traverse City, who had the opportunity for a partial return to normalcy and took it. Amanda Danielson is the co-owner of Trattoria Stella, a critically acclaimed spot offering farm-to-table Italian food in a historic setting. Amanda, welcome to Stateside.
Hi.
So what were some of the factors that influenced your decision to reopen? Were you confident, for example, that people would want to come out?
I knew people would want to come out. My phone started buzzing Sunday night, and we were taking calls from all over the Midwest while the governor was still talking on Monday. So I had no doubt that people would want to come out. I think our local community obviously wanted to come out, especially because we've remained relatively healthy up here. Opening us up for the holiday weekend and to the influx of guests from elsewhere, areas that have much greater instances of COVID-19 infections, was surprising. I can't imagine how anyone believed that anyone would stay home.
So you're saying people were trying to make reservations immediately?
Immediately. I had before, I would say 6 o'clock on the first day on Monday, we had 4 written pages of people who wanted to reserve for the weekend. And we only took names, phone numbers, requested time, and email addresses for the first couple days without confirming any reservations at all until we put in play what floor plan we were comfortable working with the inevitability of people from out of town coming.
Wow. I mean, I'm not posing this to question, you know, whether you were able to reopen safely, but was it scary to see that level of demand just unleashed?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because we have a lot of regular guests that come summer after summer. Like I said, we've been here for 16 years. Most of those guests, they went out of their way to reassure us that they had either been at their cottage for the last 2 months or that they haven't left their home in Grosse Pointe or wherever for the last 2 months. And they're people that we know, some people who do themselves have health issues, some older people who were very appreciative of the safety measures that we put in place and, quite frankly, trusted us. And there's just a tremendous burden, both to keep the staff safe and then members of the community who for 16 years have trusted us to be the gold standard in terms of food and service. But then certainly now we have to have that extra element of being the gold standard in terms of safety. The frightening calls were the ones I had somebody call me from the airport and say and ask that we be flexible with their reservation time because they would be coming directly from the airport. Needless to say, they didn't receive a reservation. and other people that were already trying to book for groups of larger than 10, having not obviously heard that that's not only still illegal, but just the concept of bringing in such a large group into a confined space was, again, just beyond me. I wasn't surprised. There was a little bit of fear. I had faith in our community of guests that really love Stella, and they by and large proved us right over the weekend. But as a result of the calls we got Monday and Tuesday from all over, we actually opened less of the restaurant than what we had originally thought we would open.
Based on the demand.
Absolutely, because I felt I didn't, I mean, why do you want to be first in line? Do you have to be first in line? It's like a, you know, it's like a bad experiment. So I thought, you know, and it just, the overzealousness of some people with little regard for the safety of my staff was a big concern for me. And I really feel that, it almost felt for a couple days there like hospitality workers are expendable as long as people get to go out and eat. And it's a challenge because for us, you know, we're in the hospitality business and it's what we love to do. We love to serve people. We're happy to be that. We are, quite frankly, if you will, a class of servant here in what we do. We just do it at a very high level, but I'm comfortable with that role as servant to those who want to come in and have that Stella experience. It's just how I came up in the business a long time ago, and I've tried to instill that in my staff as well. So trying to have to give our guests a list of boxes they have to check or things that they're required to do prior to coming into Stella is really antithetical to hospitality as I've always understood and practice it. Nevertheless, it's a different time, and we were forced to do that.
So tell us a little bit about how it went from your perspective. What was different for the diners who did come?
So they were required to give an email address at the time they made their reservation. Once we actually had reservations confirmed, which was later in the week when we decided on the dining room size and tables and whatnot, we called back, confirmed times, and sent an email that had all of our safety protocols that would be required for each guest upon arrival, including instructions on which entrance to use, et cetera. They had to respond with their acknowledgement via email, and it came from my personal email address, so that there was no question that they had, or as far as we knew, that they had shared our safety protocols with each member of their party, and that everybody that would be joining us at Stella on any of those evenings was in fact prepared to adhere to everything that we laid out.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the physical spacing of customers, can you tell us a little bit about how you designed it?
Well, first, we only allowed one reservation every 15 minutes. And we were very clear that this is one of those instances where early is not on time. And please just show up at the precise time with your entire party that you have confirmed your reservation. So there wouldn't be the congregating of anybody. We were reservation only, too. So we made it clear we would not be accepting any walk-ins. So there would be no congregating at the one entrance for guests. There was that space of 15 minutes in between. They also had to be masked upon entering and were required to remain masked at any time they were moving through common spaces to use the restroom or to leave. Then because Stella is such a unique layout, being in the basement of the old state insane asylum, we have these arches, which is actually the most sought after part of the dining room, where typically there's a table for two on one side and a table for four on the other. But then the tables are actually blocked from the next row by a thick brick wall. As such, because there's that natural barrier of the wall, we only sat one side of that area of the dining room. So we sat only six tables Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and yesterday, Memorial Day. So each party ostensibly had their own little room while they were dining.
Was there anything that you learned through the process of actually putting the plan into play?
It was interesting. I was really, really thrilled about just the flexibility of our guests and how well they received everything that they were doing and how understanding they were that we had to impose on them these restrictions. So there were several guests that replied to the email and simply said that our measures were too restrictive for them and they would prefer just to get carry out or come to Stella when we were able to relax things to a point where they'll be more comfortable. And that was completely understandable too. I didn't have anybody that was outright negative about what they were doing, just making a choice, but also being respectful of the fact that we have to err on the side of conservatism. You know, it's up to us to protect our staff and the guests that do come in here. And as much as I might not prefer to greet everybody that walks through my door wearing a face mask, that's where we are.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking today with Amanda Danielson. She's one of the co-owners of Trattoria Stella in Traverse City, which just reopened its doors to customers this past weekend. So I'm curious to know if out of all this, have your priorities changed for how you hope to provide for people going forward? It's going to be, we've got the whole summer ahead of us now.
Well, it's not so much a change of priorities. We always think of our staff as part of our family, and, you know, they're providing a good, safe, and lucrative work environment for them is obviously always a priority. And we do that by delivering exceptional service and consistency in food and, you know, maintaining, again, a legacy of 16 years, but also an ongoing, very good reputation. This added element of safety is it's not so much a shift in priority as much as it's an addition to that priority, plus the financial element. Obviously, we're not even opening up 50% of our capacity. We're layering in just because we still will err on the side of caution for the time being, until at which time we feel comfortable opening up a little bit more to that maximum of 50%, which we may not even hit. But the biggest thing is how does compensation change? And that's really hard. The way that everything worked as far as the PPP loan and the way that it was organized was just poor at best. There were very little regulations. Changes when we were supposed to have the official line, they're still happening. And our ability to compensate our staff to the level that they're being compensated by the state and CARES Act right now is difficult. So we've had some people elect not to return, either entirely because they're making more money than they would in general, or because they're still they have children or themselves are compromised in terms of their immune system and are frightened and don't want to come back to work at this point. And they don't have to, because they're being they're making more income than they likely would if they were working right now. That said, we brought almost our entire management team back to develop the systems at Stella, and then have that trickle-down effect where they would in turn teach the staff members that we bring back, obviously creating brand new systems for curbside, takeout, and eventually delivery, as well as the dine-in and maintaining safety where that's concerned. So it's interesting. Like I said, it isn't really priorities. It's everything is different. You know, our priority remains to our loyal guests and our staff, you know, first and foremost, and our own families, but it's changing almost every day. And I don't, the economic piece is going to have to be figured out at some point, because we're looking at right now over the course of, if you look at the entire calendar year of 2020, we might do a third of our projected income as far as our gross income.
How long do you think you can afford to stay open at that capacity?
Stella will endure for sure. It's large enough. It's a large enough restaurant that we can still do a fairly brisk business, just not one that can support the large salaried management staff that we've previously had doing considerably more business. And the Franklin, we haven't even reopened in any capacity yet, because we want to dial the systems in at Stella before we start spreading ourselves, being the three owners, my husband, Paul, our chef Miles, and myself, before we start spreading ourselves too thin between the two, because again, we just want to do it right and safely. So I don't know. You know, like I said, Stella will endure. She's been here 16 years. I have confidence in that, and my staff is extraordinary. And we'll get through it. We got through 2008. We'll get through this too. The question becomes, will we continue to be able to get the supply at a reasonable cost of our products that we can sell at a price that the market will bear? And will we be able to staff our restaurants with people making as much as they are on unemployment? And I don't begrudge anybody their benefits, but it does pose an interesting problem for restaurants, for farmers, our suppliers. And there's a chain that is affected, that has been terribly affected by this. And, you know, time will tell whether or not the shotgun reopening up here for Memorial Day was worth it for people, or if it was, you know, maybe folly. And here we are now in a situation where we're being questioned by the community, questioned by our employees, et cetera. Now, we haven't experienced that at Stella, but if you follow any kind of social media, there are a lot of people out there You know, in the vernacular of the time, those quote unquote haters that, you know, are blaming everybody that opened for potentially bringing the virus to Northern Michigan. I don't believe that for a second, but it is, it's interesting. We're having to just, I think, fight hospitality on a whole new front. And all we really ever wanted to do was, you know, give people an excellent experience within our dining room setting.
Right. I heard what you said about feeling that the announcement of reopening came relatively very quickly. Do you feel like the guidelines for reopening safely were clear to you?
Absolutely not. Plus, I think what was said was silly, just 50% capacity. And wear masks. I mean, it just was not very clear at all, and it was quick. And I know we had already been putting those in place. We've been following what's going on in New York. We were following what's going on in Hong Kong and other very, very strict environments for reopening, and we implemented those procedures. Fortunately, we feed the medical community, so I actually reached out to people who run doctor's offices and or the docs themselves and asked, hey, what do you think about this? Is this right? Is it too much? Is it not enough? I felt great about what we did, but I didn't even consider what the county and the state were requiring of us. And in our case, the city was going with the county, so it didn't matter. But to me, I didn't even consider that. 50% capacity was ludicrous, in my opinion, even in the way that Stella's organized, for anybody to be able to do safely. And I just, like I said, priorities, again, the safety of the guests and the staff, and there was no regulation to give. There was nothing. There were no guidelines that were given that were specific enough. And I think the restaurateurs that took it that seriously, maybe it was overkill on our part. But I look at Kate Vilter at the Riverside Inn in Leland, and she was very similar to the way we did things in terms of protecting her staff. But again, a long time legacy. And, you know, maybe it's that behavior that keeps our restaurants going for so long.
Yeah. Just so I want to make sure I'm understanding, when you say that the 50% mark just didn't have as much meaning to say it wasn't clear if that was truly safe, or it wasn't clear if that was based in some medical recommendations, or
it's a completely arbitrary number. So they're saying 50% capacity, but if your dining room can hold only 20 people, where do you put those other 10 people? I think of some of these dining rooms that are teeny tiny and tables are packed right on top of each other. How can you, without creating barriers in between those tables, and we don't even know if that's going to keep people safe, right? We think it will, obviously, because it prevents certain things. But like I said, at Stella, we have brick walls in between the tables. I knew that I could have a safe barrier between each of the parties that was seated.
Say, for example, a small sandwich shop would be in a very different situation.
Exactly. Even standing at a bar, I'm talking to you from the bar at Stella right now, and I look at the 50% of the people that could be in this bar area right now, and there's absolutely no way I could fill it to 50% capacity with people staying 6 feet apart from one another, especially with parties of walking in that are 2, 3, 4 guests. So now you have a cluster of 4 guests that has to stay 6 feet away from the next cluster of 4 guests. That formula, the math just doesn't work, right? I mean, that might fill 20%, 25%, 30 if I'm being generous. I just think that 50% was an arbitrary number, and you can't possibly, depend in many layouts, be able to achieve 50% and maintain the social distancing standards.
Amanda Danielson is the co-owner of Trattoria Stella in Traverse City. She's been talking with us, as she said, from the bar of Trattoria Stella. Amanda, thank you so much. We're wishing you a safe season this summer and hope we can come visit sometime soon.
Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Tomorrow on Stateside, as bars and restaurants in northern Michigan make their decisions about reopening, they're also giving us a glimpse into what the new normal is going to be statewide for dining out.
The biggest thing is that we're not going to be returning to, you know, packed houses and you know, communal dining is pretty much gone. You know, the communal seating at dining rooms, I think, if not gone forever, is gone for a good long while.
Placing your order from behind a mask in a half-capacity restaurant? That's coming up next time on Stateside. That's our show for today. I'm April Baer. We will catch you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.